Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Batter Up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 141 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this week's outlook is not quite as depressing as last week's, because last week the Mets, I think they had lost two in a row and were on their way to losing their third in a row. They had lost the 2-7-1 games to the Nationals, and then they lost the first game of the Pirates series.
They've only lost one, and they're about to lose two in a row. So
yeah,
we're one loss ahead of where we were last time.
Exactly. The Mets currently sit 1.5 games up on the Braves because they did manage to win 2 out of 3 in Pittsburgh by sweeping the doubleheader. And then they did manage to win 2 out of 3 from the Marlins as well, even though Friday was like a really, really shitty loss again. And the Braves decided that they can lose a game every once in a while. It's allowed. And so
they've lost 3 in a row now, right?
Yeah. The Braves have indeed lost 3 in a row, which is the only reason that these losses to the shitty teams have not been like backbreaking for the Mets, but they will become backbreaking if they don't start getting their act together a little bit here. They are
They could get their act together a lot.
More than a little.
I would even take like a 5.7 right now.
Like, it's just,
like, they forget it. They look like Jake gives up a home run and the game's over.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, it's been wild how feast or famine it's been the past week or so. Because, like,
yes,
you know, they had those, like, last week they basically had those two really crappy losses. Like, they lost to the Pirates 8-2, but then they doubleheader swept them and shut them out in the second game 10-0. And it was like, oh, okay, here we go. Like, this is what you should be doing to the bad teams. And then they turned right around on Friday and David Peterson looked like crap and they couldn't score again. And Joely Rodriguez let the game get away. They lost horribly to a bad team. But then over the weekend, they kicked their ass twice, like hard. And so it's just kind of like, what are you doing? Like, it's like huge oscillating like pendulum here. And now we've swung back to the suck dimension. And we, you know, they couldn't score yesterday and Chris Bassett looked bad. And now Jacob deGrom like looks fine but human, and they are getting shut out by I don't even remember his name, by some Samson guy. Yeah, by Samson. Like, come on.
Well, and it's not just they suck, it's they forget how to baseball. Like, it wasn't enough to just be bad. They had to be embarrassing on top of it. Like, just stop messing for 2 minutes. Why? Why do you always do this every year?
It's like, this isn't even the same team. Let us have the
fun thing. Yeah, can we have the fun?
This isn't even the same team that beat the Marlins the other day. It's like, it looks like a different team entirely. Like, what is happening?
I don't. Like, that's the problem, too, is like, Bassett's been fine all year, but he has one stinker, and that's enough. Like, there's no margin of error right now.
Right, exactly.
And if the offense had been clicking, like, it wouldn't have been as bad.
But sometimes the offense does click. I mean, that's the weird thing, is that we have all these games that looks like distinctly like same old Mets, you know, just absolute, like they've never played the game before. And then... like, well, what I expected, what would happen after last night is that they would show up today and like, boom, remember how to play baseball. Except that no, apparently that part is still a little tricky for them. So I don't know. It's very annoying. And it's especially annoying because my kids are getting super into it. And then halfway into the game, they are much, much less into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and that first inning today, like... ugh. Was one of the more frustrating innings of like borderline the whole season, and just set the tone for the entire game. Like, Brandon Nimmo gets hit by the Jeff McNeil, like, which would have been a single in the hole, and like they would have been off to a rip roaring start. And then Pete Alonso hits like a towering homer just foul, and then like, you know, has the weird exchange with Samson, and then things just don't, like, a few things just didn't break their way, and now they're down 4-0. Like, it's just very frustrating.
Well, and that was yesterday's game, too. They loaded the bases in the first inning and didn't score. And then they loaded the bases later on. What was it? The seventh with no outs and didn't score.
Yep. Yep.
Like, that's unacceptable. I'm sorry.
They've been up to their first inning BS as usual, which is good. Because, like, when the Mets are pressing and putting pressure on a pitcher immediately, that's how I know, usually how I know they're going to have a good day, even when they don't score in the first inning. Usually all season long, it's been an indication that they look like the Mets. It's like, this is the Mets team. They wear pitchers down. They make them throw a lot of pitches really early. Mm-hmm. But like lately they've been doing that, but then like then the pitcher settles in and it's fine after that. It's like, you gotta like keep doing it. You can't just like give up after the first inning.
Yeah, it's just, well, and that's the thing too, is how many people in the lineup are just automatic outs. Like, yeah, Nito and McCann were playing well, but do you still trust them on a consistent basis? Or are they going to be exposed if they get too many at-bats on a consistent basis? And then you have the DH, which you're still not getting any
production. DH is a black hole. And it's the only, like, right now, as of the past week, with Nito and McCann actually hitting, and Eduardo Escobar having his hottest streak of the entire season, batting.
Thank you, Eduardo Escobar, Dollars for Dingers Hero of the Year. No question.
Yes, seriously, he's the only best Dollars for Dingers player. You know, and him hitting eighth, or him and the catcher hitting like seventh, eighth, ninth most nights. The only black hole right now is that DH, and the problem is that like, Buck Showalter is still batting Vogelbach and Ruff or Vientos or whoever's in the DH fifth.
Yep.
And it's just an automatic out right now.
And in crucial situations, because usually you'll have either like Pete or Lindor or Nimmo on base ahead of that. And then it's just up double play, or you'll have two guys on with two outs and a pop up, or it's just, they're always up at a crucial spot. Like, that's a crucial spot in the lineup.
Yeah. They miss Starling Marte, I think.
Yeah.
A great deal, because it means that Jeff McNeil has to bat third, and Jeff McNeil's been doing fine batting third, but it's like basically, and Alonso is still like, he's out of his slump, but he's not. Like, he's getting hits, but he hasn't hit for power. I mean, I know he hit that massive, like, foul ball by a foot today, but like,
the gods blew foul. I mean, that was like, that was straight on.
It hooked right at the last second. Yeah, it's like come it took on. A sharp left turn. Cool. It was going out. But he hasn't been hitting for much power lately, even when he's been getting his hits. So it's like, it's really, you know, you've got Nimmo's been doing consistently well at the top of the lineup still. Lindor's been a little hot and cold lately. And then you've got Jeff McNeil batting third. Jeff McNeil, obviously hot still. He's like climbed up the standings in the batting title and is now like points away from the lead in the batting title. And then, you know, you have Pete, but then after that, it's just like, so it's just like they really miss Starling Marte. I feel like Starling Marte has been like a huge part of the big innings they've had, especially early in games.
He makes that lineup so much longer too.
Yes.
Also, even Canna came up in two crucial spots yesterday and didn't deliver, which was very upsetting.
Mark Canna summer. We need Mark Canna summer to become Mark Canna autumn, and it's not happening.
To be fair, Mark Canna summer was very Mark Canna summery, like 48 hours ago.
It was.
So we do need to, like, I can't get too hard on Mark Canna for having like one day where he wasn't destroying everything in his path.
Yes.
It was just upsetting.
It was upsetting.
It upset me too.
But when Starling Marte won on the IL, the Mets called up Mark Vientos, which was something, you know, we've talked about on this podcast before, as in, like, you know, the Mets considered Mark Vientos too important to trade at the deadline, but then they refused to call him up. Now they have. He hasn't looked very good so far.
Didn't he, like, get one game?
Yeah, he had one game, but he had five at-bats, and he failed to reach base in any of them, and looked sort of overmatched, I would say. But it's one game. Obviously very small sample, need time to sort of get the butterflies out. We'll see what Mark Vientos can do down the stretch. I mean, like, really, you can't be much worse than Darren Ruff right now. So
it's not like it's an easy position to upgrade if Mark Vientos is not doing it.
Yeah.
But what do you do in the postseason? Do you give them a spot on the roster?
I think you have to, because you don't really have an alternative. The only alternative you have is bringing Dom Smith back. And like, what are you going to do? Bring Dom Smith back just for the postseason when he's been in AAA for like weeks?
For a second, I thought you were going to say, what are you going to do? Bring Dom Smith back? I thought that was just like, that kind of summed it up.
The
like,
sentence was going to end there.
Bring Dom Smith back.
But I mean, like, that's really the only alternative you have. In my opinion, I think that, like, if this really stays as unsustainable as it is, they can get around it in once everybody is healthy, in the sense that Marte can play in the outfield with Nimmo and Canna, and Guillorme can play in the field, and Escobar can DH perhaps.
Yeah, like, I feel like there's some good permutations that you can play around with.
And Jeff McNeil's flexibility helps you there.
Yeah.
Like, you can DH Mark Canna some days and play Luis Guillorme at second base and Jeff McNeil in the outfield.
Or you can even, like, DH McCann.
If the catchers keep hitting, you could DH one of them.
Yeah.
It's as desperate as that sounds. I never thought it
says so much about us having this conversation. Even
I never thought I would say DH James McCann. Like, those are not words that I thought would exist in a sentence.
Yeah, is there one I missed somewhere?
Doubleheader James McCann.
No, but you're right. I mean, that's just like, while the catching position has been just the worst in the Mets lineup for the whole season, like, recently it certainly has been overtaken by DH, and which is very silly. Like, that should never happen.
I mean, Darren Ruff's WRC plus with the Mets is like 7.
Yeah.
Like, that's worse than 7. Nito and McCann have been. Like, even bad Tomas Nito and James McCann have been putting up like 56 WRC plus or something like that, you know? Like, 7. Like, a single digit. That's not good.
Like, legit I looked up Ralph's numbers recently, and I was surprised he had a batting average with the Mets. I don't recall him getting a single hit.
I do. He did. He got, I think it was a double down the right field line once.
Yes. I had a Twitter follower post two doubles, but one was on the Apple Plus game. So I argued if it happens on Apple Plus, does it ever really happen?
Fair, it didn't happen.
So but that's also why I do not remember a Darren Ruff double.
I mean, they're missing Marte, but Luis Guillorme being back does help a lot with their ability to mess around with positions and the lineup a little bit. Because now they have that back.
When we haven't...
I mean,
Nguyen hasn't exactly been killing it out there either.
No.
Not really. I mean, the past week he heated up, like, while he was playing every day in place of Marte, he did actually get on a little bit of a hot streak. But before last week, it was pretty ugly. For a while.
I mean, he was probably the best out of Vogelbach, Ruff, and him, but I mean, we're grading on a curve here.
Yeah, I mean, overall, he's had the best numbers of the three, in aggregate. Yeah. Vogelbach still has decent numbers in aggregate because he had such a hot start with the Mets.
But he hasn't done anything in way too long.
I feel like once he got diagnosed with the hamstring injury, that was it.
Yeah, they never IL'd him, and he hasn't looked the same.
No.
I mean, I don't know if he's still, like, you know, who knows? Like,
same
it could just be that
old
he's old
Mets.
But, yeah.
But the other positive thing on the injury front is that Trevor May is back from the COVID injured list, which is good because they really needed that other bullpen arm that is not, like, you know, Joe
Even if you
Rodriguez.
Don't love Trevor May. You know, he's not Adonis Medina. Like, he belongs on a major league roster.
Yes. And he looked good in his first outing back.
He did.
Struck out two batters, if I recall. So that was good. Yeah, they need that out of the bullpen. Because before they kind of had two, like, pitchers who, like, shouldn't be on a major league roster, and now they really only have one of those. They should have zero, to be clear. Billy Epler, trading deadline.
But right now, we had known at the time that they had utterly failed to address any of the Mets' biggest needs. Oh, wait, you say we did know? How is that possible? We don't get paid for this.
That's what pisses me off. Like, even you had the whole off season for this, and the whole off season was they need a bat and they need a bullpen. Okay, you failed the off season. Now we come the draining deadline. You still need a bat and you need bullpen help, and he still didn't do both. Like, he got a second chance.
Yep. I mean, to be fair, Mykel Givens has been actually good for the past, like, 2 weeks or
so. Yeah, he has been better. He's been a lot better.
Hopefully, he will continue to be better. I mean, I still wish they had done more. They should have done more.
And Peterson is in the bullpen. I don't know. I mean, he couldn't make it out of the fourth inning against the goddamn Marlins. Come on.
I mean, I still like him in the bullpen, at least, like, when he's not in the rotation, you know,
he's just so infuriating to watch. It's like, throw a strike, man. It's the Marlins.
And I don't know, like, I just don't know how his stuff plays in the bullpen. Like, he throws too many pitches. He works such, like, long counts. And it's like, we need but then he does get strikeouts, though. He does have, like, if you just look at the, like, raw K percentage, like, he is a guy that could be a bullpen guy then, because, like, he went 3 2/3 innings against the Marlins, but he struck out 7 guys, but he gave up, like, 3 or 4 runs or whatever it was. It's like, that's the David Peterson experience.
Like, if you can bring him in to fit, I don't know, let's say it's, like, the NLDS against the Dodgers, or the NLCS against the Dodgers, and you bring him in against Freddie Freeman, he's just gonna walk Freeman.
I don't know if you can carry him and Trevor Williams and Tyler McGill, who's theoretically coming back as a reliever. Like, you can't
but
carry
apparently
all those
was
guys.
Terrible in his last rehab.
Oh yeah.
So
oh yeah. Hard. He gave up four.
Yeah,
runs
he gave up like 4 runs in one inning or something, didn't he?
I don't even think he lasted a full inning.
Oh, yikes. That's not good. Well, he had been doing fine until then in his rehab. But I
feel like Peterson will get the edge because they don't have any other lefties. So,
yeah.
Like,
he's just going to be their lefty by default. We got to hope for the best.
I mean, just like, saying, get your Freeman Peterson matchup and get your popcorn ready.
Then are they just going to like yeet Joely Rodriguez off the playoff roster? He's been bad enough that they could, but they like, could. Yeah. They I just mean, don't, they don't if, have if a lefty Peterson to trust can, right now.
If Peterson can get any outs with reasonable reliability, then I don't want Joely anywhere near my playoff roster.
It's rough. They don't have a, it's rough. Ha ha ha. They don't have a lefty that can be relied upon in the bullpen at this time.
Like I can envision it. Like,
unless you're a true Alex Claudio believer.
Like Scherzer will go like seven and like one third innings in the NLCS against the Dodgers and like walk Trey Turner to bring up Freeman. They bring in Peterson and then it snowballs from there and all of Scherzer's work goes to shit. This is what I can picture it so clearly. Oh, no. Like that one walk to Turner will just ruin the whole game.
Yeah, I can see it.
Unless you bring in Diaz for like a five out save, which could also happen.
I mean,
is Diaz even still on this team? I don't know. I was gonna say, blowouts in one direction or another.
For all the pendulum swinging bullshit the Mets have put us through for the past couple of weeks, the only upside is that Diaz is getting a nice long rest because they haven't played any close games in like 10 days.
I know. I was going to say Narco is my extra, and there's not been a single Narco in
September. The Mets' secret strategy in September to only blow teams out or get blown out and then use Edwin Diaz every day in the postseason?
I don't disagree with that approach. I think yeah, it's probably a very defensible one.
But you've got to do enough to win the division, though.
It's true.
Like, can you imagine if they don't and they got to play the Phillies?
Oh, I will die. I don't know if I can survive.
Why would you say that out loud, Linda? Why are you put that in my ears?
I don't know if I can survive a Mets-Phillies playoff series. No. I don't know if I can physically take it.
That said, my daughter, her whole shtick is hating the Phillies.
Oh, it will produce some excellent.
The point where she was really bummed out that they weren't going to be playing each other anymore for the season. So I think we could get some playoff Ellie Phillies hatred tweets that could really, really knock you.
That will be peak Ellie content.
It would be. Yeah.
I'm not sure it's worth the five stomach ulcers.
It is not. Do not recommend, but it's good to have the option.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the Mets are very, very up and down right now. Luckily, right now, even if the Braves win later, the Mets will still be in first place.
Yes.
And that's what matters. But they can't keep living like this.
For a team that is in control of their own destiny, they seem really determined to ruin everyone's life.
Yes. Correct.
Well, I just want to know, like, did the Nationals stink? Like, were they the Monstars? Did they steal the Mets' talent while they were like beating them 2 out of 3 because they haven't been the same since.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it was a. That
and then
was
the Nationals beat
moment.
The Cardinals, so I think they are the Monstars.
I don't know. I would hate to believe that. That's something I cannot abide by.
They stole their talent. It's not fair.
I cannot abide by. No, not the Juan Soto-less Washington Nationals. That's not a thing. I refuse.
It's the only explanation I have at this point.
I need the Mets to
we don't love it, Mets.
No. Please, and especially Mets. The non-dingers too. Like, you're supposed to be hitting the dingers, not giving up the dingers.
Yeah.
I'm begging, Mets. It's very exhausting to stay up every night till like 12:30, 1 a.m. hate watching the Braves. I don't wish to do it anymore. But I
and
keep
yet they're giving
it.
Us no choice at all.
I know. I hate relying on the Braves opponents all the time. Although that Mariners game was fantastic.
Yeah, that was quite a roller coaster.
That was such a roller coaster of emotions that I think that's the most roller coastery game, like roller coastery emotions I have experienced for a non-Mets game all year.
Yeah, that was wild. Very fun. I'm more than happy to throw my hat in for a Mariners AL team rooting situation.
The time it was a record. It was a record time from fuck Paul Sewald to oh my freaking God. It was record time. Like, that was incredible. And the best part of, like, I mean, obviously, like, it was just fun watching it, but, like, the low key, the best part was afterwards, Brian Snicker's post game conference being,
oh,
like,
yes,
being like, Kenley Jansen has the most saves. And it's like, ignoring the fact that he also has the most blown saves. And it's like, yes, yes, Mr. Snicker, please keep using Kenley Jansen as the closer. Excellent work.
Yeah, we agree.
Manager of the year. Thank you.
And hasn't he given up like 7 home runs over his last 5 games or something insane like that?
Yeah, it's something like that. He has like
an 11. Don't tell them.
He has like an 11 ERA.
Let them figure it out over time.
Yeah. Hopefully until like they'll figure it out in November.
On, yeah, whatever the, yeah. On a Thanksgiving dinner, a sudden revelation.
Like, maybe, oh, he was giving up dingers. I shouldn't have bought him in.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
In better news, for all of baseball, the minor leaguers joining the MLB Players Association is being voluntarily recognized by the league, which is not a development I expected. It's very exciting. So yeah, it's like a real thing. It's a real thing. The minor leaguers have unionized and the league is recognizing their union. So that's great.
There was so much less BS drama with it than I was expecting. And so I guess that is a like very, very tepid thank you to MLB for not making this harder.
Yes. And this is like made like news, like beyond just baseball. Like the president tweeted about it. The president tweeted, "Congratulations to our country's minor league baseball players on a historic, swift and overdue organizing victory, and to Major League Baseball and the Major League Players Association for taking this critical step. Every worker is entitled to be treated with dignity and respect on the job and on the field." So getting a tweet from the president,
not bad. Same thing about the Railroad Workers Union.
Yeah, right.
Sorry. I guess, wait, am I apologizing for getting political on a potto?
No, please don't.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that is, I'll throw that out there. Like, we should all be like closely following and cheering on the minor league unionization, but also there's going to be a very nasty railroad strike coming up and know which side you're on. And it's the side that is begging for just the right to unpaid sick time.
Yes.
So, yes. But anyway, yeah. The minor league stuff is going very well.
Yes. And obviously this is all very good news. And like, you know, now the minor leaguers will have like the power of the union behind them. But like this fight is never over. It's a constant fight because the reason why they need the union is because their working conditions are so bad. And it's not like they form the union and snap their fingers and their working conditions improve overnight. That is not how this is happening. It's going to happen in a collective bargaining process. And if like, don't have a short memory about this.
Say, how
we just got out
of
a lockout.
How did the last collective bargaining process go, Allison?
We just got out of a lockout. So when the next 5-year labor agreement expires, you think that fight was nasty? Once the minor leaguers are also being bargained for, it's going to get even nastier, I think. I mean, I've been proven wrong at other steps in this process. I didn't think the league would voluntarily recognize the union. So better than expected.
They have to know that's what's coming, though.
Oh, they sure do. They know. Union. They're preparing for it, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think when I say that it went easier than I expected, I certainly don't mean that it seems to be over, but I did expect at this stage of the process more of a temper tantrum from MLB, since that has been their MO for so long on all labor things.
That has been
their
default.
How can I whine about this?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, we've had Rob Manfred say as recently as, like, I don't know, a couple months ago, that like he disputes the claim that minor leaguers don't make a living wage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, like that was like not too long ago. That was like a month ago.
Yeah.
And nobody asked the follow-up question of like, how so?
How so, sir?
Provide me details on this claim.
Like, please elaborate.
Tell
you
me
know
more.
What a living wage is, sir.
Yeah, I don't think he does.
I mean, I don't think he does.
No,
I don't think he has
it.
Any concept.
No. Well, it's a banana, Michael. What could it cost? $10?
Yeah.
It's a minor leaguer. What could it cost?
$1,000.
Yeah.
But one thing that was in the collective bargaining agreement is that the league has the right to unilaterally impose rule changes. And guess what? They have done that.
They sure have.
So last week there were announced a bevy of new rule changes that will be implemented for next year. These aren't a complete surprise because they were teased by being tested in the minor leagues, where the players had no power to say otherwise. The new rule changes are the following. First, there will be a pitch clock, which is already in existence in the minor leagues. And regardless of how you feel about it, and I have feelings.
I think we should do a quick straw poll on each of these between the three of us.
Yes. Okay. Pitch clock. I am against, but mildly, not like vehemently. I would say like mildly against. Maggie.
I'm pretty solidly pro.
Linda.
Can I just say no, I'm Switzerland on this? Like, I have no strong
neutral
feelings.
That's
I
fine.
Think that's neutral, totally fine. Yeah.
Neutral is an option. I have this as a subheading under the pitch clock, but it's really kind of a separate issue. Limiting pickoff moves. I'm anti this.
I see why something along those lines kind of is needed, but this seems very complicated. So we will see how that goes.
Yeah.
Linda, yeah, how do you feel about pickoff? Against. All right. Now we have banning of defensive shifts. I am vehemently against this. Maggie?
I am largely against this. Linda. I wouldn't say vehemently.
Yeah, I would say I'm with Maggie on that one. Largely against.
Largely against. Bigger bases. I am pro this.
Pro.
Maggie, pro.
Yeah, I can't see a downside to it, really.
The downside, well, downside, the people who don't like it for like purist reasons, in the sense that like, oh, it won't be 90 feet between the bases anymore. And I think that people don't like that. They think that there are going to be fewer close plays like at the bases, which I don't necessarily agree with them, but that is one of their reasons.
But that also, I mean, to me, that would be a positive.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want fingers getting stepped on.
Yeah, yeah. To me, it's a safety issue. And any rule change, even if, like, and in the case of bigger bases, this is not true. Like, it doesn't go against my sensibilities or, like, anything like that. I don't actually have any opposition to it, even in theory. But even if I had an opposition to it in theory, in practice, I would not, because it's a safety issue. Things that address safety issues on the field, I am almost always going to be in favor.
Yeah, that's an easy win.
And the bigger bases was the thing that the entire rules committee agreed upon. Like, that was a unanimous decision. The other two things were not unanimous decisions. They were the league officials voted in favor of, or the like owners, basically. The league and the owners voted in favor of banning shifts and the pitch clock, whereas the players voted against those two things.
So yeah, I mean, the thing with, you know, and I was very skeptical of a pitch clock for a long time. And the thing that has swayed me on the pitch clock is all of the folks I know who see a lot of minor league games. Because I can't think of any exceptions. They seem to all love it and love how it makes the game feel. And like, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm also, again, like with small kids, I am sort of in favor of getting those game times back towards the 3 hour mark, because, you know, my kids have never seen the end of a game at Citi Field.
Right. The data is the data. Indisputably, it has shortened games at the minor league level. So like, from that perspective, if your end goal, which the league's end stated end goal is to make the game shorter, and that's what you want, then yes, the pitch clock will will help. So like that, from that perspective, I'm not trying to contradict that. Like, that's just true. I have a hang up about it, because to me, baseball is a sport without a clock. I'm being a crank about it. I understand.
No, see,
I totally respect that.
You know, I feel that way too.
That's really where I was for the longest time. And it's only kind of the level of enthusiasm that has brought me around, and whiny children.
Yeah. I'm not ready to like storm the commissioner's office over this, like the pitch clock, the shifts I'm pretty pissed about, but the clock, like, whatever, I'm sure I'll get used to it. I'll probably cry about it for like half a season, and then I'll get used to it. And then I won't remember a time when it wasn't, you know, it'll just be incorporated, and that's the way it'll be. I think this is both an argument for and against the clock, which is that I think actually for the majority of the league, you won't notice it. Like, I think for most players, it'll be a pretty easy adjustment. It's the minority who actually need the clock, who's the reason why this clock is happening, that it'll be tough for them.
It'll be really interesting to see during spring training what all of that looks like. Because you can kind of already get a sense that some of them are sort of trying to shift a little bit, which they shouldn't be. Like, calm down. It is September. You have a job to do. But yeah.
Like, I don't think the experience of a Jacob DeGrom game is going to be demonstrably different, because he works quickly and he does not check in on the runner at first every 5 seconds, because he doesn't even hold runners on, really. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Linda.
We were saying that yesterday Bassett will probably be the one that gets affected the most by it.
I have a feeling Chris Bassett is going to throw a shit fit about it.
Yeah.
Max Scherzer already said that he's going to game it.
Yeah, which is fair.
That's the thing, is that the secret, like, sixth tool for baseball players, and nobody thinks about it because there's so few of them, is smarts.
Yes.
Like,
it's a chess match between hitter and pitcher. That's what it is.
Yes. And I mean, I think that gets overlooked in part because, like, I do have it on authority from people who know lots of athletes from all sports, that baseball players really are just like not that bright. But the ones who are, then like shine all the brighter. And anybody like Max Scherzer, you know, because he was also so mad when they introduced PitchCom. Because, yes, of course, like, hiding signs and like that's a skill that comes from his intelligence.
That's part of gamesmanship too.
Yeah. So I love that, like, Maxi has some new games to play. Like, that is great. I am all about giving additional edge to players who can, you know, do basic arithmetic and tie their shoes in the morning.
Yeah. And now, I mean, now with the limiting of pickoff moves that comes along with this, because it kind of goes hand in hand with the pitch clock. It's a different rule change, but it's affected by the pitch clock, because one of the ways that they can like reset the pitch clock is by like throwing over to first base. And now they won't be able to do that like just keep doing that to keep resetting the clock and then essentially render it useless.
Yeah, it's a necessary complication, but it is a complication.
It is a complication. And I think there are going to be way more stolen bases as a result of this. Now, it depends on like how you feel about that depends on whether you think that's a positive outcome or not. But it's going to be an outcome, I think.
I mean, ultimately, I don't think more stolen bases is a bad idea either. You know, and I guess for me, I feel like the kind of baseball that all of these rules are designed to encourage is a kind of baseball I really like. But I also don't like a lot of extra rules. But I also recognize that, like, just simply because of how the game is played, you're not gonna get fewer guys selling out for home runs and running up huge strikeout numbers. That's not going to happen unless you make a big change like banning the shift.
Yeah.
So I'm torn. Like, I've been really torn about all this because on the one hand, like, this is all definitely the kind of baseball I want to see, but it's also very like picky and specific. And there's a lot of things about it that annoy me.
Yeah. The crux of my opposition to these changes is just that I don't like the league putting its finger on the scale too much. And this to me is an overreach.
I get every sport needs to adapt. I get it. But at the same time, you're making fundamental changes to the sport, like the ghost runner on second. Like, that's not baseball.
Yeah.
I just want baseball and not gimmicks.
Yeah.
If I would trade just about anything at this point to get rid of the ghost runner. That is like my least favorite rule in the game.
Yeah,
more than this shift, which I hate a lot, but I hate the runner on second and extras.
It's so dumb.
My whole being, it sucks. And like, to me, I don't know, like, I understand, like, the pitch clock, I understand more than the runner on second, because like, I know that like all of this, not necessarily the shifts, because the shifts is more like about, you know, trying to make it so that like you like Joey Gallo is now no longer like a viable player, basically, and then with the shift ban he will be again, but like basically it's all designed to shorten the game. But to me they're different because the pitch clock is like less downtime, less time when there's not action, whereas the runner on second is literally forcing the hand, like it's forcing the game to end earlier
in
a way that I don't like.
It's like, all right, let's get a move on, we're done here.
It's like playing the walk-off music when you're making your Emmys.
Yeah, it really is. It is the baseball version of that, and I hate that because I like baseball and I don't like a world where there's less baseball to enjoy. Like, I enjoy when there's more baseball. I like extra innings.
Well, I feel like whenever those were talked about, it was always like, well, you know, a couple extra innings are fine, but you know, you don't want to be in like a 16 inning. I'm like, are you kidding?
I love those games.
Crazy random like 8 hour long games that happen once every 10 years. Those are the best.
Those are the best.
Call in late to work the next day. Get some popcorn.
Yes, fun. I just like, fine. I don't know. I mean, like, again, I have always thought that a good compromise would be to like institute it in the 12th or something like that.
Yes.
Or no, even crazier, like the 14th.
Like, that's fine. Like, I get like once the game reaches a certain length, it's like, okay, then you can start playing the music. Like, fine. Mm-hmm. But you gotta like, that's like playing the music before the person even starts talking.
Yeah. Like, let them accept their damn award first.
That's like, that's like they take the trophy, they open their mouth, they start playing the music. It's like not having acceptance speeches at all.
And then they gotta talk over the music just so that they can thank their mom.
Shout out to Jennifer Coolidge, who just started dancing to the music that was playing her off at the Emmys last night.
Oh, excellence. Love her.
Or I guess it was Sunday night now.
The other thing, speaking of music, that was the other thing. Like, players aren't allowed to have more than like 10 seconds for their walk-up music, and that like in between pitches they can't play music.
Well, I'm fine with not playing music between pitches because I feel like that's the time when I become a crusty old lady and I'm like, this is too loud. I can't concentrate.
We're
in the middle
of that bat
because someone is screaming in my ear to clap my hands. And like, I know how to clap my hands, but like, the thing about the walk-up music though, is I don't, there's already a time limit between at bats. So yeah, like, why not? Like, why does the music have to be a thing in that? Why can't it just be like, why can't that rule just stay the same? And you know, if you have 30 seconds between at bats and the music is 30 seconds long, then congratulations, you're squeezing in 30 seconds. But like, I don't know.
It's going to get increasingly shorter until it's like one of those games that you like guess the song games where they play the very first note of the walk-up music and you have
I'm really bad at those. Maybe that's why.
I'm like, why are you taking like all that stuff is entertainment. You're taking away some of the entertainment of the game.
Yeah. That to me feels like not, that's not when people are looking at their watches. People are looking at their watches when, you know, when a guy is, has already taken like 35 seconds between pitches and then throws over for a third time to first when the guy wasn't even actually all that far off of first. Like that's the problem. It's not it's not the Narcos of the world.
No.
Yes.
Or even, I mean, you know, we all remember David Wright's walk-ups music. So it's like, the, you know, it's part of the experience of the game. You know, you remember Chipper Jones's, I still do. And every time I still hear Crazy Train, I think of Chipper Jones. Like, that's part of the, you're minimizing the experience of the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, the pitch clock, like, I understand its utility, even if I don't like the idea of it. But I can at least like, I'm at least open to it. I'm open to it. I'm against it, but I'm open to it. I'm open to having my mind changed. The shift, I am pretty pissed about. That's, to me, that's like, again, it's like putting your finger on the scale too much. It's like you're trying to promote a certain type of baseball, whereas the game will always naturally correct itself. You're trying to speed up the process. I get it. But this will correct itself eventually on its own. It, like if you keep shifting players and they keep making outs, they will find a way to stop making outs. Jeff McNeil is literally the counterexample to this.
But Jeff McNeil is also an exceptional player.
Yes.
And I think the thing is that they did find an alternative and it's selling out for home runs.
Yes.
And the general sense is that as a whole, that's a less entertaining baseball experience. And I'm willing, and like, that's not something I feel strongly about, but I do kind of, I don't necessarily see a way that this style would be shifted naturally. Like that just doesn't seem, it seems like the more information they get, the more they lean into these really extreme shifts that increasingly make it difficult for anybody who is not Jeff McNeil to get a hit like that.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets as a team, not just Jeff McNeil, the Mets as a team have been the counterexample this year of like how to build a baseball team that doesn't rely on home runs. And it's why everybody keeps calling them lucky. And but they're not. We talked about this on a previous episode. It's not luck. It's literally batted ball skill.
Yeah, it's speed. It's, you know, it's fundamentals. It's getting out of the box fast. Like it's. Yeah.
They've managed to do this despite the shift.
Yes. And that's then, true. That's true.
Like we said with, you know, Scherzer manipulating the game, the shift is taking the strategy out of the game too. Like
it
that's,
is.
That's fundamentally baseball is strategy and outthinking your opponent. Like people find baseball boring, don't understand. That's a big part of what baseball is. And now you're taking that another aspect of that away.
Yeah. I don't like taking tools out of a team's toolbox artificially by imposing a rule that they can't do it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, we'll have to see how it plays out. But we'll see.
I think Pete just hit a useless home run.
I mean, it's not useless if it's for dollars for dingers.
Yeah. But yay.
We'll take it. We'll take it.
I think we do get extras for Pete Dingers.
Yes. And, you know, if it's something that helps get his head on straight, I think part of what was so brutal for him in that first inning was losing that home run, which is not something that he's had a lot of lately. So, yeah, no, I will take a probably not game changing dinger from Pete in the ninth.
Well, that was Lindor yesterday. Like, oh, a useless dinger. Yay.
Not useless. Not useless. I mean, I think, aren't we at the point where like every dinger is like hundreds of dollars?
I think so.
That's pretty amazing. All
the extras.
Yeah. Yes. I would I mean, I'm guessing off the top of my head, but that's probably like $200 or $300 that Pete just like poofed.
I just did it and it literally is.
Yeah.
Because a live tracker update. We went from like $4,100 to $4,442.75 after that Pete home run.
Jeepers creepers. That's amazing.
So each home run is like $300 at this point.
Wow. Yeah.
More.
One narco before September ends. Just
more.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love it. I know. We're sitting here like, we have been having like sad talks about the Mets, but also, I mean, everything happening around Dollars for Dingers has just been extraordinary. So
at least we got a Dollars for Dingers homer before we signed off for the day. But yeah, speaking of which, our fundraising event is Saturday.
Yay!
We spent a really long time before we started recording this podcast finishing up final logistical details for you guys. So we are so excited. Please,
you want
please
logistics?
Come.
We've got logistics.
Oh, we've got all the logistics.
We have so many logistics.
We've got checklists. We have schedules.
We have like more index cards and Sharpies than you can possibly imagine.
We've got backups so many for our backups.
Yes. So please, please come to Ebbs at Citi Field this Saturday before the game, 4 o'clock
PM. Our best prize selection ever. It's not,
that is not even close,
just absolutely dazzling.
More than 20 different items for you guys. And every single one is more exciting than the last. Yeah. It's just like, so we're so overwhelmed by the support that we've already gotten. And we can't wait to like celebrate it. And have you and hang out with all you guys. So please come. It's going to be a fantastic time. And we can't wait to make this the biggest Dollars for Dingers yet. So please come. But in the meantime, we will finish the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So my specific walk-off win is, We had a great pool day on Saturday, and it was the last of the season. And it just, my larger walk-off win is the New York City public pool system. It's run by the Parks Department, and the city public pools are amazing. The one in our neighborhood is called Highbridge Pool. There's a couple dozen all over the city. And they're huge, generally, like quite big. And they are free, $0 at any point to get in there. You know, the only thing you have to bring is a lock. They have some rules, like things like, you know, you can't bring in floaties or toys and stuff. I mean, just like kind of basic, strong safety and cleanliness rules. But like on that note, you know, public pools have a really bad reputation for cleanliness, but actually like they are among the cleanest bodies of water on the planet. Like your average public pool is many, many, many times cleaner than your average private pool, just as like a heads up. Because we have this incredible free pool in our backyard, metaphorical, we were there, I want to say we were probably at the pool 15, 20 times this summer. Like just everybody would just like roll out of bed, roll into swim stuff. I had a literal swimming go bag that I hung on our front doorknob of like all of our towels and our lock for the locker and sunscreen. And like, I'd be like, all right, everyone get in, go to the pool. So, you know, my walk-off win is just like A+ pool day with the whole fam on Saturday when it was nice and warm. And then just general like pool days. Yes. Thank you. New York Public Parks Department, thank you. The people who worked there were lovely. We got to know them really well. Like, and as another thing, like the most of the public pools, if not all of them, serve as hubs for school lunch distribution during the summer. So anyone 18 or under can just walk up at any point during the day and like get a free bag lunch that is like not too shabby. And unofficially, anyone older than 18, they usually have a lot of extras and I'll be happy to throw whatever your way. So yeah, thanks to the school food folks and the parks folks and just everybody chilling out and having a great year of much pool activity. Ellie has never had swimming lessons and she is practically swimming just because of how much time we spent there and how much opportunity she had to practice. So yeah, hit up your city pools next year because it is a real hidden gem.
That's awesome. I truly wish I had a pool nearby that I could go to because now swimming is like one of the only things I can do.
Oh.
But that's awesome. I love the pool. I spent so much time at the pool as a kid. So much time at the pool.
I love a pool.
At the community pool.
Yeah, so nothing beats time. A good pool.
I mean, because I also like, I swear they invented sand for beaches because otherwise I would never leave. I love, love, love a beach. But so the pool just like basically accomplishes that of like, hey, you want a beach, but with no sand. It's great. Love it.
Yes.
The Mets lost. Sorry.
We don't love that.
We don't love that. But Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win this week?
Well, it's kind of a continuation of my walk-off win from last week. That the past 2 days, I tweeted it. Lucy took a little while to like feel comfortable enough to sleep out in the open. So now she's taken to sleeping on my bed. And then Maddie jumped on the bed and went to snuggle with her. Yeah. So I was Yay. Like, oh, they're friends. Like, when Maddie would try to play with her and she'd hiss, I'm like, oh my God, they're not getting along. What did I do? They're both miserable. But like, you know, after researching, they're saying that it's normal. They're just establishing their boundaries and like learning how to be friends and like live together. So, but like me being the worrier, every time like Lucy would hiss, I'd freak out. But then, like I said, they never fought. It was just, you know, establishing her boundaries, which, you know, good for you. You stick up for yourself.
You raised her right.
Yes, exactly. So, and right now they're sleeping on the bed again together. So I'm like, oh no, they're becoming friends. So it's just, you know, like I was really super worried adopting Lucy because if Maddie wasn't happy, that probably would have broken my heart. She deserves to be happy in her home. But I also wanted to give Lucy a good home. So it's nice that I think my fears have, you know, finally subsided. And they're not only coexisting, because there are like a lot of times cats don't ever become friends. They just tolerate each other. But it seems like they're going beyond that. So I'm hoping that, you know, they do become little buddies and not wake me up at 4 a.m. because they run across my face because they're chasing each other. But other than that, you know, it's been nice having another little buddy in the house. So that's my walk-off win is, you know, my two cats becoming friends.
Two cat household.
Yes.
Fluffy that's a friends. Wonderful walk-off win.
I mean, that's my future life goal. I want a dog and a cat who are friends.
Yeah, like the Mac and...
Yeah, Michael and I want Willow and Mac life.
What I want too. And now the dog I've always wanted is the King Charles Spaniel. And now so there is a King Charles. And now that's all I can think of is like, now should I get the dog?
I'm going
to
say
that's a hard
yes.
image to conjure every time you think about your dog.
I know, but the dog is so much better. So now every time I hear King Charles, I think of the dog. I don't think of the king.
I mean, the dog was there first.
He was there yes. first, damn it. So take that. Take a million seats.
Yes. Yeah. Superior dog.
But my condo only allows 2 pets. So there will be no dog in my future. At least, you know, the immediate future.
Yeah. Yeah. My walk-off win is a simple one again, because I just got to take the small wins where I can get them. My friend, my best friend from college, stayed over with us over the weekend. Her and her boyfriend came to stay because they had one of his friends was had like a baby shower or a wedding shower. I can't remember, a shower of some kind.
Gifts were given.
They were in the area, and so they stayed with us. And it was just a very nice weekend, and I'm glad I got to see her. And it was really nice. It was just like pleasant. We hung out, we watched Glee, which, you know, we're doing like a big Glee rewatch, and Michael will only watch it when he's had beverages. And that's like the deal that we've made. He's like, you can rewatch Glee and I'll watch it with you, because he's obviously never seen it. But I can only watch it if I'm drunk. And I was like, that is fair, but he's not funnier.
Wrong. Yeah, he's not wrong.
It's funnier to watch him watch it when he's drunk and see his reactions to it, because it's like, this is the first time I've rewatched it. Like, I watched the whole thing live. I was like a Glee super fan. And like, now that I'm watching the show back, like as a full fledged adult, I'm like, this is something that they aired on TV. It happened. It's just like truly a wild ride. So yeah, and this particular friend that stayed with us, like, we, you know, we used to, in college, we used to like every Tuesday night without fail, like that was Glee night, and we would get together and we would watch it. So it was just nice to hang out and reminisce a little bit. So that is my walk-off one for this week. While you're waiting for Saturday to come and waiting to go to Dollars for Dingers, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com. Check out all of our fantastic content. We have game recaps, win or lose. We have analysis. We have news posts. We have morning news posts. I have weekly meters for you guys every week. Check that all out at AmazingAvenue.com. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You can subscribe to the podcast, Amazing Avenue Audio, wherever you get your podcasts from. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. See you all on Saturday.